say can be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning, 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program. Time permitting, I'll get some of your texts. Got three or four here that are still outstanding. I'll make sure that we get to before the conclusion of today's broadcast. Joining us now, however, he is a candidate in tomorrow's special election for Congress. For those of you who live in 1, 2, 6, and 7, those congressional districts have an election tomorrow, all based on the redrawn maps that the legislature approved earlier this year. But Austin Sidwell, candidate on a Republican ballot tomorrow, joins us now. Austin, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having us on, Jeff.
Hey, thanks for making time. We do appreciate it. Well, how are you feeling? It's the home stretch here. I'm sure you're exhausted, but you got to feel pretty decent about where you, the sort of ground you've had to make up.
Yeah, I'm at peace. Something came over me about a month ago, and we've really been there. There's no one going to say that they've outworked us. And because of that, I know God put us on this path. I don't know what the end result's going to be, but I'm at peace with what we've done and how we followed him.
Yeah, I was telling you off air, just kind of driving around the district a little bit here. You know, a lot of Sidwell signs starting to kind of spring up, and not just in public right of ways or whatever, but in people's yards, I think. So I think, I know signs don't vote, but there's something to be said about that.
Well, we've kind of taken the approach of we wanted to hand those to people. Like, we weren't just going to put them up in random public places. So most of our signs since the very beginning, those are people that we've shaken hands with and handed them those signs. And then that's grown as we've gotten closer and people have taken 20, 30 signs and helped put them out in their neighbor's yards. And it really is a grassroots movement and it's been awesome to be a part of.
And the other thing about this election, I mean, you've been running for well over a year, that this is sort of an overtime event, but tomorrow there's no runoff tomorrow. And, who knows what turnout's going to be, but you feel like there's a puncher's chance here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like you said, I don't think anyone can predict what turnout's going to be. I know that, and I'll say this for all of the candidates, we've all put in the work to let people know that this is there because it is important. It was talked about at the Purple Heart ceremony this past week. Like, people died for our opportunity and our freedom to get out there and vote. So it is a huge deal. I mean, this is your congressional representation. So I want as many people to show up as can show up. And hopefully, we see better than 5%, but we can't predict that. But with what we're seeing, we do have a chance and we're excited about it.
Well, for the sake of this audience, maybe they didn't hear you on a Dan and Dalton show, or they haven't heard from you on this show yet, but tell us a little bit about yourself real quick once again.
So, absolutely. So, I grew up in Baldwin County. I went to the United States Air Force Academy. I spent 12 years flying helicopters in the Air Force. That included time in combat search and rescue. And then a lot of my time was at Fort Rucker as an instructor up there. Along the way, while I was active duty, I got an MBA from Liberty University. And I got my law degree from Jones School of Law up in Montgomery. And then I spent the last 3 years running my family security company here. It's based out of Foley. We do a lot of work down in Gulf Shores and Orange Beach. But I really just, I stepped up to run because I have kids at home. And I want to make sure that we ensure that they have the same opportunities that I had when I was growing up. So I see the direction of America, and it's kind of the direction of our government being inundated with special interest. And I want to fight against that. I want to stand up for the people of Alabama.
Yeah. And let's say you're elected, you go to Washington, D.C. I mean, obviously it's tough to really do a whole lot as a new member of Congress, as a freshman, but you're still going to be there. What does that look like for you? What do you want to get accomplished?
Well, we want to start with places where we can get some traction as a new congressman. And one of those areas is the VA. I would like to see us actually bring service members into the VA before they get out of their service. A lot of people don't know this, but when you get out of the military, you get 2 weeks of PowerPoints that tell you how to do everything, and then they shove you out the door and kind of forget about you, and the onus is put on the veteran to go seek out those benefits. And that's not how workers' comp works in the real world. And I think our government owes it to those people to, you know, get those people signed up and with their first medical appointment within 6 months of getting out of active duty service or reserve or whatever that is. So I think that's something that we could actually get bipartisan support on, and some support even as a new guy up there.
Yeah, and you know, and so it's just getting on the right committees, knowing who and knowing where to look, and a lot of that is just part of the game there. But it's still the Washington, D.C. game. Is that something you're comfortable with?
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, somebody asked me this early in the campaign, you know, how will I have I say this for your radio audience, the cojones to step up and stand my ground. And when you've cut the engine on a helicopter with a student pilot sitting next to you at 1,000 feet and rode it to the ground, like you can stand up to what it is in D.C. So I may not have D.C. experience, but I have a lot of real world experience, a lot of experience working within the government from the military side. And I think that that's going to benefit me when I get up there.
Let's talk about some issues right now. And you and I've talked about it, but yeah, I mean, you just can't get around not talking about what's going on with Iran. It's sort of intertangled with the affordability question, energy prices, gas prices, et cetera. But it just feels like we're kind of walking in quicksand. One day you feel like things are improving, and then next there's some incident or something. What do you make of it?
It feels like it's felt for the past 20 years with every conflict we've had in the Middle East. It wasn't really posed as that at the beginning. But now I hear it's getting, you know, more just kind of, it feels like we're trapped again. And you know, with Afghanistan, with Syria, with Iraq over the last 2-3 decades, I think the American people are just ready for an exit strategy. Like, if that includes, you know, going in there with more force, then let's do it. Let's accomplish the mission. Let's win this war and then bring our people home. And if the strategy is, you know, the vice president's strategy of negotiating and making sure that we have a deal that works for us, great. We have the energy resources here to protect the Western Hemisphere and to really dial into, you know, more of that Monroe Doctrine type of mentality. If that's the case, then let's get the best deal and let's get out of there. But I don't think anyone is really pleased about us extending this war any longer than we have to.
If a deal is obtainable, even there's some that say, you know, why don't we just hit them harder? Why don't we do more and just settle the score? And to me, that comes with fraught with all kinds of problems. But, you know, if a deal, sure, these guys will tell you they'll agree to a deal and then they'll turn around the next corner and they'll violate the deal. Is that something we ought to consider?
Well, I mean, I think it has to be on the table. I think some sort of deal. I mean, we've never seen the alliance of the GCC and Israel and the things that are going on the back of the Abraham Accords that we've seen before in the past. So I think that there's some strength in our partners there to hold them accountable. And we're just going to have to rely on that. But get back to the America First idea. Right. That is not being stuck over there. So I think we have to do whatever we have to do, whether it's a deal, whether it's hitting them harder. I'm probably more like-minded with you. Hitting them harder brings a whole lot more problems. But we've hit them pretty hard. Their infrastructure has been hit. Their nuclear program's devastated. From what I can tell, I'm not privy to any more intel than the average reader out there. But, you know, we've done a lot to set them back for decades. And if that's the case, let's take our win on that regard. And let's focus on producing our energy and producing the resources we need to not give them the power going forward.
Well, and you know, such a big part of it, I think the discussion has kind of moved from their nuclear ambitions to the Strait of Hormuz and protecting that shipping traffic. Now, I mean, I get it. We could be self-reliant with energy, but the way it works, the price of oil, it's gauged on a global market. and there's buyers for a domestic produced energy in the United States all over the globe. If they're not able to get it out of the straits there in the Middle East, what do you do there? Do we need to be as active, or if not more active, in trying to be the world's policeman in these shipping channels?
I don't know. I think there's an argument both ways. I would say that we have to plus up our refining capabilities here on the home base in America so that we can be more of the centralized location and hub for that global oil trade, right? We're not getting off the petrodollar anytime soon. You and I could have a nuanced conversation about what I think about that, but that kind of does hold us into this Middle Eastern forward idea or on the global stage. But if we could refine more oil here, if we could update our refineries to handle the type of oil that we have here in the United States, we can shift a lot of that global focus here to the United States and to the Western Hemisphere over the Middle East.
Well, now, your opponent thinks that the actors in that neighborhood in the Middle East need to be more active, that, you know, you need to see more from the Saudis. And the idea to me of the Saudis setting foot on Iranian soil, I mean, that comes with a lot of historical problems. But is that something, it makes sense. It's in their backyard. They need to be responsible for what they're, you know, what goes on in their neighborhood to some degree, rather than us on the other side of the globe. Is that somehow a workable solution in your mind?
If we can get them to agree to the Abraham Accords, and if we can get them to partner with Israel, then yes, I think it is, because they could act as our arm out there to help police them. I'm with you. You look at the history repeats itself. We know the history that kind of has encompassed that. I don't know if Saudi Arabia would have the power or the ability to really be the dominant force in the region and to hold Iran in control. But they've got to do it in partnership with the rest of the GCC and Israel. I mean, it's not one nation stepping in. It's a collection of all of them. And the United States has the ability to, I don't even want to say police it from there, but to pull the economic levers in order to keep that entity at bay and to keep that under control. So we have, especially if we shifted a lot of the oil power and the oil resources and the idea of that the Western Hemisphere is now the new hub over the Middle East, we would be able to pull those levers. So it's a complicated, I'm not going to sit here and say that I have all the answers, but I don't know if Saudi Arabia is going to be this key, you know, to the solution to that puzzle. But they definitely have to be an active part of it.
Joy by Austin said, well, he's a candidate in the first congressional district special election primary tomorrow. Kind of move on here, and some of the things, this has been the mantra, very, you know, very hyper-focused on, let's say, in national politics, but this populism, but it's not like what we think of as like Trump-style era populism, it's just socialism, it's the DSA, it's the rise of these ideas, which I think it's just kind of like, you know, people are just looking for something. And this seems to make sense in their minds for whatever reason, but it is just fraught with all kinds of problems and constitutional issues. But I still think it's a concern. What do you think? The rise of socialism, these candidates winning in these blue states that are far, far left. What do you make of that?
I think that it rises out of an atmosphere where we haven't actually implemented some of our conservative values to show people the better way. I think as Republicans, we have to win on the issues and we have to do what we say. You know, the private public partnerships, the corporate relationships that have kind of become the staple of the Republican Party do not show people, they haven't brought down prices. It hasn't affected people's pocketbooks in a positive way, so they're looking for another mechanism. And I've said this, I mean, really my whole life. we have got to show people that the free market works. But in order for the free market to work, we've got to get the government out of it. We've got to actually shrink the size of the federal government. When you talk about healthcare, when you talk about the things that really affect people's pocketbooks, we can't win half in, half out. We've got to buy into a small government world where they're not involved in our healthcare. You know, we've had Obamacare on the books since what, 2011, 2010. We've had Congress, we've had all branches of government multiple times since then, and yet we don't do anything to counteract that. And that's a problem, and that's where I see that people who live kind of in that world of paying attention can be swayed either way, not just the Republican or the Democrat. They're going to go with whatever way directly affects them, and they're searching for solutions right now. Obviously, socialism doesn't work. It leads to communism. History repeats itself. It's a terrible system, but most people aren't educated well enough to see the ramifications for that, or they ignore it. And so we have to win on our conservative values. And I don't think we're doing that right now.
Austin, we got to jump. But before we go, folks want to find out more about your candidacy, your campaign, or any of that, how can they find that?
SidwellForCongress.com, SidwellForCongress on Facebook, Instagram, J.A. Sidwell on X. We've put all of our stuff out there. So what I can ask right now, if somebody's got my number out there. I've given out over 8,000 business cards and my number to people. So find my number, message me on social, ask me the question that you need to know if you're hesitant about voting for change.
Austin, good luck tomorrow. We'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it.
All right. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.